The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. All right, candidates, Hugh Hewitt. It's Friday. The weekend is upon us. Welcome. Let's get right to the news. TikTok got clocked. Oh, my gosh. They got run over, then they backed the truck up in the Congress and ran over it again and ran over again and ran over again. I mean, I had a law student yesterday tell me they still have TikTok on their phone. And so he spent 10 minutes explaining to them how a dossier of everything you do, say, talk to, go places, how everything you linger over is stored in the vast CCP data bank if you use TikTok. And everybody else in my law school classes is off. I've got one holdout. Because she doesn't care. That's what she says. She doesn't care. Maybe by the end of today, maybe if people watch the hearings yesterday, Kathy McMorris, Roger chairing House Energy and Commerce, maybe they will realize they've got to get rid of TikTok. You probably, the phone on which it has been installed is probably infected. And if you treat TikTok like a lethal, lethal virus to your privacy, then you'll be smart. Other news. I got my Ellis items this morning. And you know, when I go on the air, the only person that's updated anything is either the foreign press, the Financial Times or the Times of Israel or the Telegraph, or Ellis, who's been up, I don't know, since 1 o'clock in the morning compiling news items. And it's a Substack subscription. So I'm just going to read you a few of them. This one, I'm not sure where they're still working on the draft. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell and his colleagues are expecting a sharp drop off in economic activity through the rest of 2023. At least that's the implication from new economic projections they published this week. The figures show policymakers now expect the U.S. to eke out a 0.4 expansion this year, down from the 0.5 growth that they penciled in at the last forecast round in December. That might not seem like a big downgrade at first blush, writes Ellis, but it's important to consider that the number is in light of the economy's surprising strength in the first quarter so far. As Robin Brooks, the chief economist at the International Institute of Finance in Washington, points out, in January, the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now tracker forecast first quarter domestic product would rise 0.7 at an annualized rate. By March 16, that estimate had risen to 3.2%. Fed policymakers don't release official projections for quarterly growth, but taking the latest estimates from the private forecasters and the Fed economists into account, the new projections imply the Fed officials see a sharper downward trajectory for quarters 2 through 4. As Brooks put it, the Fed is bracing for recession. Well, we had one last year, 2 successive quarters of negative growth. Media didn't want to call it a recession because they were protecting Joe Biden, but you felt it, you know, we're going to have back-to-back recessions because it's Joe Biden and the Democrats don't know what they're doing. Financial Times. Commercial property loans are joining the deposit flight and bond portfolio weakness as perceived risk for U.S. banks. Well, you know, that makes sense, given what COVID did to the commercial property market. But it also may be a little contagion there, maybe just a little bit of panic. Don't spend a lot of your day following the markets because they're just trying to figure this out. Then 2 political items from news items this morning from AP News. Approval of President Biden has dipped slightly since a month ago, nearing the lowest point of his presidency, as his administration tries to project a sense of stability while confronting a pair of bank failures and inflation that remains stubbornly high. That's according to a new poll by the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Research, which shows that there have been modest fluctuations in support for Biden over the past several months. The president notched an approval rating of 38% in the new poll. After 45% they approved of him in February and 41% in January. So he got a little bump from the State of the Union. Now he's down to 38%. Jeez, it's going to be a long 2 years. Finally, an increase in shortages of inexpensive yet critical medications is forcing hospitals to make horrible choices and is amounting to a national security threat. According to a report and testimony at the Senate Homeland hearing on Wednesday, Drug shortages increased by 30% last year compared to 2021, with an average shortage lasting 18 months. Now let's get to TikTok. Three headlines. TikTok faces uncertain future after five-hour congressional thrashing, says the Washington Post. New York Times, lawmakers blast TikTok CEO for app ties to China, escalating tension. Wall Street Journal, TikTok fights rocks U.S.-China relations. You know, that doesn't even begin to tell you how bad this was yesterday. Let's get right to Kathy McMorris Rogers. She's chair of House Energy and Commerce. She's talking to TikTok CEO. Cut number one.
You are here because the American people need the truth about the threat TikTok poses to our national and personal security. TikTok collects nearly every data point imaginable, from people's location to what they type and copy, who they talk to, biometric data, and more.
Let's go to cut number two. She keeps going.
Tiananmen Square, yes or no?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
The massacre in Tiananmen Square.
That kind of content is available on our platform. You can go and search it.
I will remind you that making false or misleading statements to Congress is a federal crime.
I understand. Again, you can go on our platform, you will find that content.
Okay, thank you.
Wonderful. Oh, Kathy McMorris Rogers, thank you. Oh, my gosh, I love that question. And that's, by the way, how to do it. Bang, bang, bang. This is the CEO of a billion, and they're seizing all the data of people who love the app. Xu Chu said this, cut number three.
Let me start by addressing a few misconceptions about ByteDance, of which we are a subsidiary. ByteDance is not owned or controlled by the Chinese government.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. Liar, liar, pants on fire. I hope they prosecute him. Cut number four.
And they were going to follow individual American citizens. I ask you again, Mr. Chu, has ByteDance spied on American citizens?
I don't think the spying is the right way to describe it.
Right.
This is ultimately...
We can differ on
this
that.
This is ultimately an internal investigation.
Any TikTok or ByteDance...
You know, when you've got to say, I don't think spying is the right term, when you've got to say, well, you know, that spying word, that's got just a bad Boris Badenoff and Natasha feel to it. Let's talk maybe about facilitating algorithmic growth or something like that. Cut number five, more Xu Chu.
Mr. Chu, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, if you use our app and you open it, you will find our users who get all sorts of content.
That's not my question. My question is, do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Well, it's deeply concerning to hear about all accounts of human rights abuse. My role here is to explain what our platform does on this.
It's a pretty easy question. Do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, I'm here to describe TikTok and what we do as a platform. And as a platform, we allow our users to freely express their views on this issue
Earlier
and any other issue that matters to them.
Well, you did.
Bravo, Debbie Lesko. Debbie Lesko is from Arizona. And she nailed Chu on the Uyghurs. Quick one more cut talking about what the bottom line is. Cut number six.
Today, do ByteDance employees in Beijing have access to American data?
Congressman, we have been very open about this. We have relied on global interoperability.
Access to American data.
Congressman, I'm answering your question if you give me just a bit of time. We rely
no,
on global...
No, don't get... Throw him out. Just throw him out. This guy started lying from the time he sat down to the time he was done. And if you're going to lie to Congress that way, and you're an agent of the Chinese Communist Party, not in terms of being a spying agent, but you're a subsidiary of a CCP-controlled ByteDance in Beijing, throw them out. Ban them from the country. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. If you are not going to be watching March Madness, or if your other half hates March Madness, you got to go to the movies. And the good news is John Wick is back. The bad news is Operation Fortune has not been much noticed by anyone. Sonny Munch is here, the official movie critic of The Hugh Hewitt Show. Airline miles rolling downhill towards him faster than boulders in an avalanche. Sonny, I want to talk to you about Operation Fortune and Guy Ritchie before we go to John Wick. Why did no one know that movie was out?
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
It was very entertaining.
Well, you know, that movie has had an interesting and kind of cursed release. It was supposed to come out. It was supposed to come out more than 12 months ago, it ended up getting kind of caught in the Russia-Ukraine news cycle because originally, the villain in that movie was a series of Ukrainian gangsters.
Oh my gosh! No kidding.
So it got kind of caught up in that news cycle. The final version, they edited out the Ukrainian gangsters. They changed the villains around a little bit. I think I don't know if they reshot any of the scenes or if it was just a little bit of snipping here and there. I for one really enjoyed Operation Fortune.
Ruby so did there. We. Even the fetching Mrs. Hewitt, who generally doesn't, she won't go see John Wick, but because Hugh Grant was in it using the Michael Caine accent, she wanted to go see it.
Yeah. So this is the second movie, I think, that Hugh Grant has done with Guy Ritchie. The first was The Gentleman, which came
correct.
Out. A couple years back. I feel like Guy Ritchie has kind of unlocked something a little bit different within him. You know, he's noir.
He's funny and bad.
Yeah, no, it's interesting what he's doing. Anyway, I liked Operation Fortune a lot, but because it got kind of, again, it got wrapped up in all this, and there was also stuff with the distributor. So this movie was financed by a company called STX, which has kind of gone out of business, has sold off their interests. So this got bought up by, I can't even remember who, MGM or somebody. It ended up getting dumped into you know, 1,000, 1,500 theaters or something like that without any sort of advertising campaign or anything. I mean, the only reason I knew it was coming out is because they played the trailer for it in front of every movie I saw at the Draft House for like.
Well, the only reason I knew it was is because it hasn't stopped raining for 120 days in California, so we were desperate. I mean, we literally looked at every movie and found. I said, "Guy Ritchie's got a release," and yeah, bingo. Yeah. Now let's go to John Wick. I got to preface this by saying two very entertaining law students that I have, Conrad and Bob. They are like the Statler and Hilton in my Con Law 2 class from Sesame Street. And as we were leaving, Conrad says to me, how many bodies in the first 5 minutes? What's the body count in the first 5 minutes of John Wick 4? And I said, I'm guessing the over is 6. What is it, Sonny? You've seen it.
Boy, the first 5 minutes. No, in the first 5 minutes, I think there's a total of 4 bodies.
Oh, really?
I think 4 bodies.
I took the over. Oh, doggone it. Okay.
I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that in the first 5 minutes there are exactly 4 bodies. But I could be wrong. I may be misremembering. I mean, there's a lot.
Okay. I will go see this with my sons when I get back to Virginia, where it will still be playing in a month. But I won't see it for a month. Tell us about it.
Well, all right. So John Wick Chapter 4 picks up kind of where the previous one left off. If you remember, John Wick Chapter 3, he has been shot by Winston. He falls off the roof of Continental, and he's picked up by the Bowery King. He's played by Lawrence Fishburne. You know, it's kind of a Matrix reunion, Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves. And number 4 picks up where that leaves off. John Wick is training underground in the Bowery King's kingdom. He's trying to get back into shape, and he does, and he decides he's got to kill the elder in the desert. You know, this is the thing everybody from the who even people who really liked the third one kind of agreed, like, did we really need that long desert sojourn? You know, it kind of stretched things out a little bit. It was a little bit too goofy in the world of the world building and all that. And this movie starts off by sending us right back there. This movie, it's 169 minutes long, and it starts with another trip to the desert, where John Wick is gonna, you know, chase down the elder who sits above the high table, and we've got new lore for the high table. We've got new bad guys from the high table. There's so much more lore in this, and there's a million fight scenes, and they all go on probably 5 minutes longer than they strictly speaking need to. And it is full of exciting action. Look, it's the sort of movie where everything is done more. Everything is just done more. That's the only way to describe this movie. It's more, Hugh.
It's 169 minutes?
169 minutes. 2 hours and 49 minutes long.
And 20 minutes of trailers beforehand, so you're making a three-hour commitment?
It's a three-hour commitment. So look,
it's like a Gilligan's Island song. I just cannot believe that.
If you thought the previous entry was a little bit too long and a little bit too self-involved and a little bit too wrapped up in its own mythology, this might not be the movie for you. I'll put it that way. Now, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. And I like these movies a lot because I think they have done something very interesting to you. Beyond, set aside the coolness of the action, and there's lots of cool action here. Set aside all the great stunt work by put together by Chad Stahelski, who is the director here, who used to be Keanu Reeves' stunt coordinator on some of his movies and stunted double on some of his films. Set aside all that. The movie has evolved into something very, very interesting to me, which is a meditation on the nature of power and where power comes from. So, you know, in the first one's a very simple film. Guy has a dog.
Somebody kills his dog.
Guy wants revenge for the dog, right? That's the very basic story there. It's super well done. It's very tight. That movie's only an hour 40 minutes. You know, this movie is almost twice as long as that movie. After that, they had to expand the world to keep this series going. They had to expand the world, which is where you get into all of the stuff with, again, the high table and, you know, markers and adjudicators and, you know, the rules about the Continental Hotel and all that. Right.
Right.
But it's a really interesting look at where power in the world actually comes from. Does it come from systems and rules and law and order? Right. The only reason that a guy like Winston, who is played by Ian McShane again in this fourth one, the guy,
Deadwood,
the manager of the Continental, the guy who you know, tells him that no business can be conducted on continental grounds, and everybody respects his rules except for John Wick, and John Wick doesn't respect his rules because John Wick, his power comes from his own personal excellence. His power comes from his ability to transcend the system. The system needs him within it, because if he can escape the system, then anybody can. The system breaks down, right? And that is kind of what this whole fourth movie is about. How much the system, the lengths the system will go to keep excellent people within its.
Oh, so this is a movie about the Chinese Communist Party trying to set down Jack Ma and every American with TikTok.
Sure, something like that. I mean, you can look at different. There are lots of different ways you can look at this in terms of, you know, I a friend of mine described it. Well, that sounds. You sound like you've just described an Ayn Rand novel, and kind of. There's a Fountainhead-ish aspect to it, right? Like, it is.
What you just described to me, Sonny, is a meditation on Putin, Xi, and Khomeini. If you've got total power, what will you do to keep it? Because, you know, once you've got total power, you're screwed if you lose it.
Exactly. Well, there's a moment in John Wick 4 where Winston is talking to the villain of this film in a Paris art museum, and there's a poster, a painting with the French, you know, vision of liberty, you know, the bare-chested woman.
Yeah.
And you know, I think Winston describes it as a warning to all tyrants. The lesson here being very clear that the high table is a system of tyranny, that they have gone too far, that they have oppressed the people too long, and they are going to overthrow them. Now, granted, this is all wrapped up in the world of, you know, high-powered serial-killing hitmen, but it's still kind of an interesting concept.
I got one quick question for you about this, Sonny. Keanu Reeves is 60 years old, or almost 60 years old. He doesn't change. I mean, it's still the Matrix guy, sort of like Brad Pitt plays the same role again and again. Why do we like that? Because this is going to sell a gazillion dollars worth of tickets, right? This is going to blow out the box office.
Yeah, this is. I think it's safe to say that this will probably be a fairly big hit. I think it'll open bigger than any of the other John Wick movies, each of which has opened bigger than the one before it. Why do we like Keanu Reeves? I mean, I think Keanu Reeves is kind of a cipher, right? I mean, he is a blank space onto which we can project.
I had a different answer. I think he's a stoic, and we like stoics. We're tired of whining.
No, right? I think that's part of it as well. I do think that he is, and this is different than Brad Pitt. I mean, if you look at Brad Pitt,
in
movies like Bullet Train or Snatch or, you know, back to Guy Ritchie, he does a very different sort of thing. No, I think that's probably fair. You know, Keanu Reeves has a stoic sensibility to him, so.
Ever since The Replacements, I've been thinking of him as, okay, this is a guy who'll do any show, he'll do any movie, and he'll do it well, and he'll work, and he'll get it done, and it will be a very well-crafted piece of John Wick or Reeves or whoever he is going to play. Just like Brad Pitt, I mean, you get what you pay for. You know what you're going to get. And we like repetition, right? We are repetitive people.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And look, the reason the John Wick movies are so successful, I think this is arguably the best action franchise out of America in the last 30 years.
I agree.
The reason these movies work is that the stunt work is impeccable. I mean, it really is just...
I won't wait to see with my boy. I got to go see it. Sonny Bunch, Across the Movie Aisle is his first podcast. The Bulwark Goes to the Movie is his second podcast. I have to Google them all the time because I didn't write it. Why didn't you write a review of Operation Fortune? We don't have enough time for you to answer. You got 20 seconds. Are you going to write one about Operation Fortune and Guy Ritchie?
I wrote a very quick thing on a service called Letterboxd, but I had to see it after everybody else. There was no press screening.
Okay. I would love for you to explain Guy Ritchie to me because I just think he's fabulous and I don't know a thing about him. Sonny Bunch on Twitter @SonnyBunch. Follow me, America, to the next segment. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. For 30 years, I've been trying to tell people, you got to have a strong United States Navy. We are a naval power. And apparently people are beginning to notice because 60 Minutes actually ran a story on Sunday night about the decline of the United States Navy and its underfunding. Jerry Hendricks wrote a piece in The Atlantic about it this month. And finally, we've got people in charge of defense subcommittee in the House. Ken Calvert, to be specific, an old friend of mine, and he joins me now, is chairman of the DOD subcommittee. That's the subcommittee of the House Committee on Appropriations that funds the Pentagon. Good morning, Congressman Calvert. Welcome back.
Good morning, you.
You just got back from the Pacific. What did you find out?
I found out that we're weak in the Pacific and that we need to get to work. We have a lot of things we need to do. Happily, we have allies. Japan is doubling their defense spending. Taiwan is obviously very concerned, and we're trying to arm them up, get the deterrence in there they need as quickly as possible. And, of course, we still have problems in South Korea because of what's going on in the North and these continuing tests that Kim Jong-un is carrying out.
So, Congressman, you are now chair. You're the guy on defense appropriations, and pretty much the full committee will accept what you come forward with. Are you going to remedy the gap? I mean, we have a huge Navy gap with China. Are you going to help remedy it?
Oh, absolutely. I met with the CNO yesterday, Admiral Gilday. We were going through that. As you know, we're down to 296 ships. Unfortunately, the Navy is asking to fund 9 ships and proposing to decommission 11. It's pretty hard to get our ship numbers above 300 if we're decommissioning more ships than we're building.
But now,
last year, of course, you know, we added ships. We're going to continue to change that number.
Now, Congressman, I know we need more submarines, attack and the boomers, the Columbia class. What did you talk about carriers with Admiral Gilday? Are we going to build more carriers, or are we deciding they're too vulnerable to hypersonics?
I think we have to have a serious conversation about the future of aircraft carriers. When we make these decisions, they're 50-year decisions, because that ship shall be out there for a long time. And we have to assure ourselves that they're survivable. And yep. With these hypersonic missiles today, that's in question.
Well, who else has ability to threaten? Because I've always thought we need aircraft carriers for every battle except the strategic battle with China, because they can take them out, even if they've got great defenses. Carrier community people tell me, no, we can stop those hypersonics, even a swarm. I don't know the answer. I haven't got any clearances. What do you think?
That's a serious conversation we have to have. A swarm of hypersonic missiles right now on an aircraft carrier would not be a good thing. Let's put it that way. I don't want to get anything classified, but obviously there's things that we're doing to defend carriers. But let's face it, it's a big target, and that's something that they would go after. Submarines, you can hide them. They go underwater. They're very lethal. We need to build more of them. We need more shipyard capability, a larger workforce to accommodate that. Even though we've appropriated for two Virginia-class submarines, we're not getting there. We're about 1.5, quite frankly. So we need to build up our shipyard capability. Jerry, by the way, came by the office the other day, dropped off his Atlantic article, which is a very good.
Captain Hendricks and Mark Montgomery are the two go-to guys on this stuff.
Yeah, and we listen to them very carefully. Know that's the biggest weakness we have, quite frankly, in the Department of Defense is the Navy right now. We have to build up the Navy as quickly as possible. Obviously, Air Force has some challenges also, but Navy especially.
Now, Congressman, I am a big believer that we need carriers. We do, because short of war, they're the biggest stick in the bag. They're like the driver. But we also need to be very clear-eyed that battleships were not much use to us in World War II, and carriers, 25. I don't know. How long till they are off the seas, do you think? Is it 50-year proposition, a 30-year proposition? Because we're always going to need to be able to steam into a disaster place like Philippines with the United States Navy and take care of them. And every regional conflict like Iraq and Afghanistan, we need the carriers in the Gulf or in the Indian Ocean. But we also have to how long is that transition going to be?
A long one. Look, we're going to have carriers for a long time to come. We just built the 4-class carrier. She's just, quite frankly, deployed after 4-year shakedown, which was unbelievable. And the next 4-class carrier is going to be on the sea shortly. So we're going to have carriers out there for a long, long time. We just need to make sure we use them properly, and they're expensive. Let's face it, they're an impressive sight. When you see an aircraft carrier deploy along with its ships that move with it, it's an impressive projection of strength of America. But you have 5,000 souls on that ship. It's about $20 billion when they're fully loaded. We want to make sure we protect that asset.
You know, they played a war game down at the GOP retreat. And I understand the first move of the war game resulted in the sinking of a carrier and the loss of 5,000 lives and the retreat beyond range of a second carrier. That's what I'm told the scenario is. Have I got it right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And so what do you think happens if anybody takes out a carrier? I think we destroy that country. I don't know if we go nuclear, but I think we destroy that country.
Well, obviously, we're full-blown war at that point.
So
that's as many people as we lost in the Iraqi war.
Right. And so people should be aware. The Chinese Admiral Staff worries that they think they can get away with sinking a carrier and not having war escalate. I don't think they can. But let me talk about the second biggest challenge, which is we have the nuclear triad, and most people know about it. Some people don't. But I'm beginning to wonder whether we need Minuteman missiles anymore, whether we ought to just pour everything into the Columbia class and the B-21. What do you think?
No, we need a triad. The duad is not going to work. It does not give us the absolute mutually assured destruction signal we need to send. That would just send a message to China, potentially Russia, that they could win a nuclear conflict. And we don't want any question out there that is on the table. So we've gone a long way down towards the Minuteman III and to replace those missiles and to make sure that we have a workable triad system.
Well, doesn't the triad get overtaken by hypersonics if they become... they can be launched from anywhere, right? They become the MX modern version. People won't remember the MX. You and I do. But a hypersonic with nuclear capability, that becomes almost indestructible, doesn't it?
Well, we'll have that too. But remember, a Minuteman III missile is a hypersonic missile. So, and by definition, and it carries, you know, that carries a lot of firepower over into our adversaries that they cannot defend.
Does it move as fast as the hypersonic?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So it's, what will the number be? You've done some work, obviously. The sooner we get your defense subcommittee number out and divide it up, the better off the country is to focus the conversation. How long do you think it will be till we see the draft of the Pentagon's budget coming up?
Well, as you know, the president submitted his budget, $842 billion, which was a 3% increase, which doesn't even keep up with inflation. Our number will be obviously higher than that. It'll be, in my mind, we're sticking to the Mattis-Trump national defense strategy, which is 3 to 5% increase over inflation to have a credible defense primarily directed toward China. So so you should look at the number in that range. And I think that we have a pretty much agreement a lot of, on our side, on the Republican side, and many Democrats, quite frankly, that recognize that the defense has to be funded. You know, by the way, defense spending is not driving this country's fiscal challenge.
As a no,
percentage
it's not.
GDP, we're at the lowest level of defense spending since World War II. So we need to find money where we can. I'm not the most popular cardinal amongst the 12 of us because I'm taking money out of all those accounts to fund defense. But that's our primary obligation as a country, is to defend the country.
Now, a lot of people don't mind that, but they also think the Pentagon civilian bureaucracy is too large and that the contracting process is too complex. Can you fix that? Can you at least give the Pentagon, the SecDef, and the Secretary, Service Secretary, some authority to cut waste by eliminating? I mean, we just got 2.8 million civilian employees. A lot of them are at the Pentagon. We've got to reduce that number, especially at the lower levels.
We're at the highest number of civilian employees relative to the military force since World War II.
Oh, wow.
We have 800,000 civilian employees, and that has to be reduced. And, you know, we don't have to fire anybody by attrition. Any large organization have about a 3 to 5% attrition rate per year. So we hire at a lower rate, bring down those numbers. We could save as much as $125 billion over 5 years just doing that, according to the Defense Business Council. So there's a lot of things we can do, just the way we do payroll. We're still doing things by ledger in the Department of
Defense. I know. Chairman Calvert, I am curious. Would you be is it possible for you to give the SecDef authority to just send people away? Because, you know, I ran OPM 30 years ago when you just started your congressional career. It's impossible to fire anyone. And so the Pentagon is carrying a lot of dead weight that they know is dead weight, but they can't get rid of them because of the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978. Can you give the Secretary of Defense and the Service Secretary some bypass authority?
Any authority I can give them, I will give them, whatever I can legally do. I talk to a lot of two-stars that are they're just asking me every day, please give us some authority to straighten this up. You know, there are so many things we can do, a lot of low-hanging fruit that we can pick to save money and to make the department, quite frankly, more efficient. It's the bureaucracy has slowed down the procurement process.
Oh, it's so vital to get this done. Now, to put a bow on this, you talk to the CNO, and Gilday's a good CNO. Did you talk him out of retiring 11 ships, or did you tell him we're not doing that?
I told him we're going to build more ships than we retire. We've got to get to the 355 ship Navy that they've been talking about. We can't be going south. So we have some tough decisions to make. I know the cruisers are not, the Navy's believes that they're putting good money after bad into them. We're going to take a close look at that, but we need to get our shipyards up to snuff too. We're down to 6 shipyards, Hugh.
I know, it's incredible. And we ought to build them on the Great Lakes and then bring the stuff down the St. Lawrence Seaway. I mean, we got to build them everywhere on the Mississippi. We got to reopen the ones on the West Coast, Congressman. Last 30 seconds to you. I know you're a Californian. I want you to do hometown politics, but we don't have what we had on the West Coast.
No, they, well, we have NASCO down in San Diego. They do a great job. We BAE just put a significant dry dock in. But, yeah, we need to expand all of that. We need to have some non-traditional shipyard construction, potentially what other ways of doing things.
Ken Calvert, it is always bracing to talk to you, but I'm so glad you are back there and that DOD, you're the number one cardinal among the cardinals, and one day you're going to be Pope, but I really do am so relieved you're running defense appropriations. Thank you, Ken Calvert. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Sarah Westwood joins us from the Washington Examiner most Fridays to review the week in Congress. Sarah, I just had a very interesting conversation with Ken Calvert about defense probes, and it's going to make every aircraft carrier supplier sit up, take notice, and say, oops, I think our business, we're going to be out of the carrier business in 25 years. I don't know if you listened to it, but would that shock some people?
You know, yeah, I think there are a lot of, certainly Republicans, who really don't want to see any deviation from what the Pentagon is doing right now when it comes to the spending fights, right? They don't want to touch anything that has to do with war preparedness or traditional war fighting. So, yeah, if there were some creative solutions to spending at the Pentagon that involved traditional military infrastructure, I think that would surprise some people.
Yeah, if someone's driving into the Pentagon right now and they heard Ken Calvert talking about, we have to have a long conversation about the carriers. A light went off in their head saying, my gosh, that means 20 years from now, we're not buying new carriers. Sarah, were you at the TikTok hearing yesterday?
I was not physically there, but I did. I was able to catch a good bit of it.
Boy, TikTok got clocked, right? What did you think of that?
You know, it's really remarkable, first of all, to see how bipartisan, how quickly this issue has become so bipartisan, right? Because there was a time during the Trump administration when it was seen as a purely conservative or Republican thing to want to ban TikTok. And all of a sudden, the momentum very, very quickly has swung in the direction of most lawmakers seeing this as a national security issue. And I don't think that the TikTok CEO provided really any satisfactory answers to the concerns that the lawmakers had, especially the Chinese government's ability to access TikTok data. That was never really addressed. And so, you know, I think that this could be an inflection point where Congress could potentially get more aggressive with TikTok.
I think you're exactly right. And, you know, trial lawyers tell me, I'm not a trial lawyer. I've done a couple, but I'm not a trial lawyer, that, you know, when the evidence is with you, you argue the evidence. When the law is with you, you argue the law. And when neither the evidence or the law is with you, you divert attention of the court. That poor guy, I even felt bad for like a half a second for the CEO of TikTok. When he said, I wouldn't call it spying, I just said, game, set, match. It's over. It's spying. And, you know, oh, that was a bad answer.
It was a bad answer. And it, because, you know, it got to the heart of the concerns from the lawmakers. He kept sort of always pivoting back to Project Texas. You know, we're going to house this data where Oracle can manage it. And that's not the, the problem is that as long as this company still has Chinese ownership, there are those laws. And Congressman Dan Crenshaw, I think you had one of the best exchanges with the CEO, pointed out it doesn't matter because of the laws on the books in China. TikTok has to share that information with the Chinese government if they're ever asked to. And they're not allowed to talk about it. They're legally bound to secrecy in the event that the Chinese government does request that data. And Chinese engineers would continue to have access to it, even if it were housed on American soil. So the Project Texas thing he kept bringing up as a solution to all these problems really doesn't get at the heart of why Americans are concerned.
You know, my producer is basically a Project Texas guy because it's going to become synonymous with doesn't exist. Project Texas is going to become a meme for a complete ruse, a sting, a three-card Monty game in front of Congress. Because Project Texas, I was laughing every time he said it. It didn't work. Nobody believes him, Sarah. Am I wrong?
No, there was no appetite for Project Texas. I mean, lawmakers from both parties found that a completely insufficient solution to the problems. And, you know, the one solution that they were potentially interested in, the lawmakers divesting from ByteDance, was something that the TikTok CEO just wasn't willing to entertain.
And he wouldn't mention the Uyghurs. I mean, it was just agony because he's going to get shot if he does. You know, I understand that his whole family will be disappeared, but why in the world did they agree to that? And who came up? Do you have any idea who came up with the name Project Texas? Somebody is within TikTok who thought this was a genius idea, and now it's a joke. Did anyone put up their hands and say, I'm the father of you know, Project
Texas. I don't think anyone would at this point. It's kind of sinister sounding too, you know? So I don't know why that was the name of it. But yeah, it's, I think that TikTok is under enormous pressure. Maybe they thought that this solution and sort of creating this perception that maybe they're being more transparent would work in their favor. But to send a CEO in there who wasn't empowered to offer any real answers, actually, I think it's sort of a worse look for TikTok.
It was a terrible day. Sarah C. Westwood on Twitter. Thank you for joining me, Sarah. I want to thank everyone for listening today, and I want to thank everyone for donating to Food for the Poor. That banner is still over at HughHewitt.com and will be for the 3 more weeks left in Lent.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.